Hey, Mark here. So these episodes originally were released on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, but I love these episodes. I love talking with Jay about movies that either are directed by Rennie Harlan or they feature aquatic sea beasts. I mean, they're some of my favorite conversations. Also, we've brought in some A-plus guests, and we just had a great time talking about these movies on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. So I figured if you haven't listened to these yet, I would include them as a bonus episode on Movies, Films, and Flicks because I just enjoy the conversations. I think they're worth listening to, and I think you're going to like them. So after you listen to these episodes, if you dig them, go check out Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, or just look out for more. And thanks once again for listening to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I really do appreciate it. There's like 2.7 million podcasts out there, and I'm honored that you spend the time listening to Movies, Films, and Flicks. So enjoy this. If you like it, make sure to go to Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, and check out all of our episodes, which break down Deep Blue Sea 1, 2, and 3. They're insane. And for a fun added bonus for all you Jackass fans and Movies, Films, and Flicks fans, I have something fun. I have 5 copies of Jackass Forever on Blu-ray, and we're doing a raffle. So if you want a copy of it, just send me a message anywhere to say, Mark, I would love to have a copy of Jackass Forever on Blu-ray. I'll put your name in the raffle. So yeah, own Jackass Forever on Blu-ray today. Johnny Knoxville and the Jackass Gang are back with new friends and celebrity guest stars for the most hilarious, outrageous pranks and dangerous stunts ever. The brand new movie is certified fresh from Rotten Tomatoes, and critics are calling it the best Jackass yet. Own it on Blu-ray and get bonus never-before-seen stunts, rated R, from Paramount Pictures. Yeah, just shoot me a message. Thanks. Enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. I am Mark Dog Hoffmeyer.
And I am Jay something Latinish Cluet. And today... today we are continuing our delve into Deep Blue Sea adjacent films as part of my education in movie watching by branching in a different direction. We've done The Shallows, we've done The Abyss, two very much aquatic films. Now we're looking at the most aquatic film that Rennie Harlan directed that wasn't Deep Blue Sea. We're looking at Cutthroat Island this week. What is Cutthroat Island? I discovered this morning what Cutthroat Island is. It's a film. It's made in 1995. It stars Gina Davis, Matthew Modine, and Frank Langella. Gina Davis is Morgan Adams, the daughter of a pirate captain who is killed. He's the brother of two other pirates, and they all have a third of a map that leads to treasure on Cutthroat Island. And so she sets out to get the piece of the map and head there. One of the uncles is Frank Langella, Dog is his name.
So good. So imposing and great. Oh.
And along the way, she falls in with William Shaw, played by Matthew Modine, who is a kind of petty thief, and helps him out. Now, we need someone to help us out with this, and this is a swashbuckling film. So I think, Mark, it'd be great if we had a sword expert on to help us talk about Cutthroat Island. So who is joining us today?
Oh, a sword expert.
A sword expert. Jeanette, I don't know if you know this about our guest.
Jeanette, you're a sword expert?
I am. Well...
We have Jeanette Ward. Welcome back. What third time guest, I believe.
Yes, she is.
Yes. So happy to have you back. But that's a sword expert. I got to hear more about this.
Yes. Well, if you didn't see the video that I posted last week in our most recent Belly Dance show, I certainly did a double sword number with my troopmate Emily, and it came out great, and I'm very happy with it. Whoa. So you know what I'll do? Send you the link. You can go ahead and attach it to this podcast.
Oh, we absolutely will.
For sure. I'll put it with the article. So on Movies, Films, and Flicks, I post this every week, and when I share it, I'll include the video on there so people can watch it. And I'll tell people to follow you on Twitter. Then I'll be like, go to her Twitter, and you can see all the cool videos and stuff.
Yes. So yeah, sword experts. Listen, I occasionally dance with a sword. Expert might be higher praise.
So you mentioned a double sword dance. Is that two people, two swords, or were you dancing with two swords yourself?
That's a good question. I've done two swords by myself, but this particular number was two people with two swords, so a total of 4 swords.
Because at the end, in the climax of Cutthroat Island, Gina Davis is fighting with two swords. She has a long sword and a small sword that just wonderfully springs open to reveal itself to be a trident and is never used again, but is delightful in that one moment.
Yeah. No, I will admit that both of my swords are exactly the same so that they balance perfectly, okay. Which is key when dancing with them on your head.
Have you watched Steel Dawn?
No, should I?
It's a Patrick Swayze movie. It's sort of Mad Max-esque, where he's in the desert.
Just to make sure, he was also in Red Dawn.
Steel Dawn. I think that Steel... Wait.
He did two Dawn films.
We're not talking about Red Scorpion, right? With
Steel Dawn. Steel Dawn, 1987 film with Patrick Swayze.
Wow, all right. What are the odds?
He didn't have much time to train, so they just used his dancing ability. So a lot of his sword fights, it's essentially him dancing with a sword. Like it's very dance-esque sword fighting.
I'm making a note of this right now.
And I also think Steel Dawn features my favorite... Well, this movie has some of my favorite cinematic punches, because I love the like effects that are used. But in Steel Dawn, he's fighting these Tusken Raider-type creatures that crawl in the sand. And it looks like one of them just blasts him right in the face. Like, it looked like a real punch that they had. But it's one of my favorite movie punches of all time in Steel Dawn.
I love it.
Patrick Swayze gets punched by Tusken Raider.
He made Red Dawn, Steel Dawn, Dawnie Darko.
Dawnie Darko. He was in the band PM Dawn.
Dirty Dancing.
That's a Jessie J song. She's like talking about Dirty Dancing in the Moonlight.
Jessie
Domino.
My goodness, we're a few minutes in and we got a Jessie J reference. This is fantastic. I'm already
I remember listening to that song and then she's like Dirty Dancing in the Moonlight. I'm like, what? What's happening here?
Well, where else do you dirty dance? I thought you could only do it in the moonlight.
Yeah, I guess dirty dancing during daytime hours.
It's much less dirty.
Yeah, it just seems like a little sad, maybe.
Smudgy dancing.
It's like spring break.
Dusty dancing.
Yeah, dusty in the desert.
There must have been a cowboy called Dusty Dancing.
I
had to. Have
been. Hold me closer, Dusty Dancing. Oh man,
it's gonna be a loose show today, guys.
So I just wanted to share. I was doing some research about Cutthroat Island, and they were talking to Matthew Modine, and Matthew Modine says that a lot of people come up to him, and they're like, "Oh man, you were in Cutthroat Island. That movie was a bomb." And then Modine goes, "Have you watched it?"
Yeah.
And then the person goes, "Well, no, I haven't watched it."
There you go.
Yeah. And then he's like, "Watch it." He's like, "It's really fun.
It's really
this
fun."
This is. I just love this story, though, because the narrative about this movie has been set. And I think when people watch it, they're like, oh, I'm going to watch the biggest bomb of all time. And there's more reasons why this is the biggest bomb of all time. I mean, it was released in December 95 against Jumanji, like Toy Story, Heat. I mean, the amount of movies that it was up, Sense and Sensibility, like the amount of movies that were out in the theaters when this came out just buried it. And it's just so much fun. But I think people think that they should watch it ironically when this is there's a good villain. There's a fun supporting cast.
There's a great villain.
There's like the supporting cast of that Snellgrave guy who has the chain for the hand. What a cool little gimmick. And then he gets dragged to the bottom and it's just fun. And I get the excess of it, but there are scenes where you are just, you know, they filmed in Malta and Thailand where the beach was filmed actually. And they, I love when they're on top of the boats. Like, they had to get a crane up there. Like, there's just so much scope, and everything is just so, I don't know. This movie is
a blast to watch. I remember seeing this in the theater in 95, so I would have been, like, a year out of high school. But it's so big, it's so fun, and it does not pretend to be more than it is, which I kind of, I've said this before, and I appreciate. When a movie is like, we're not trying to win Oscars, we're just out here to have a good time. The other thing that I love, and I will say this for the rest of time, have as big a budget as you want. Let me see every single penny on screen. If you have a giant budget and I don't see it on screen, then you are wasting my time. Like if you spend all your money on an actor instead of on set pieces.
set pieces.
Yeah. To quote Alexi Lalas, which is a different type of set piece, but still it applies. I want to see all the money on the screen, and this movie puts all the money on the screen, sometimes unnecessarily so, but it's gorgeous. It's big. The settings are incredible. The costumes are great. The action, it's wonderful. It's so much fun, and I think you're absolutely right, Mark, when you say the narrative was set in place, and it was almost before it came out, like, oh, this movie is terrible. And so many people went in being like, oh, it's terrible. And as you said, so many people say that now, oh, it's terrible, without having seen it or maybe going back and watching it and just appreciating it for a giant piece of popcorn fluff, which is what it's meant to be and what I find so entertaining. And if you watch it now, then go back and watch Pirates of the Caribbean, which it was said this movie killed, air quotes, the pirate genre until Curse of the Black Pearl came out and, air quotes, reinvigorated it. You know, is there...
But there, you know what's weird, though? There wasn't really a pirate genre.
Right.
So it's like... it was
a pop,
like, this came out, this is an MCU film, and then it kills the comic book movie, right?
Exactly, but right.
This killed the pirate film. Well, how many pirate films were there in the 90s? And then someone goes, well... That's like another thing that narrative has been set. This killed the pirate genre. Well, what genre was it?
I mean, unless you loop it in with, like, the sword and sandal genre, which that's kind of a stretch. So I don't know. It deserves to be reappreciated. It maybe go back. And if you watch it now, certainly you can see pieces of it where you're like, well, I see that Pirates of the Caribbean. Well, while being solidly founded on an amusement park ride, also drew some from this.
Oh, absolutely. And how much could it have killed a a genre when the following year Muppet Treasure Island comes out?
Right.
Ooh,
another pirate film. A better pirate film, certainly. But it's
And also, Geena Davis gets a superhero landing.
Let's talk about Geena Davis for a second.
She does a flip and does a Black Widow landing in 95.
Are you referring to Olympic archery level archer?
And like Boston, like a high level school,
it's
like
a just member.
Exactly, wildly smart, like Olympic Gina level archer.
The best, yeah, the best. 6'1".
League of their own. I read a very mean thing by the piece by the Independent where they were talking about how Carolico got financing for this, and to be fair, like this movie went through a lot of issues too. Like, so Carolco, this was their last movie before they went under, and they got about $50 million from foreign investors, and so they needed to start shooting. But the problem was they didn't really have a finished script, and then Michael Douglas left because he wanted to have more of an equal role with Geena Davis. He didn't want the Modine role. He wanted the, like, he wanted 55 to her 45%, and Renny Harlin said no, so then he left. And then they didn't really have any big names.
He wanted Romancing the Stone.
Exactly. You know what's funny? I was going to say that, and then you nailed it. You, like, read my mind. And, like, and then, like, Harlan was so busy looking for another actor that they started building sets before Harlan even came out there. And then their DP broke his foot 2 weeks into filming that he had been working with Harlan for years. He breaks his foot. And it's just, like, this movie was sort of cursed and then really rushed into production. But I still, I don't know, but that was the narrative. Like, you read a lot of articles about it, and that's what everyone talks about. They don't talk about how beautifully unpretentious and earnest it is, and that there's a great monkey in it. Like, you know, like, sold to the lady with the monkey. Like, what a beautiful line.
She's trying to blend in, not as a pirate, and she has a monkey on her shoulder.
Well, didn't they say they were terrible at it?
Yes.
Terrible at blending in. I also, we're going to get deeper into this, but the line... do you practice a profession or are you a man of leisure? Like, I'd like to use that more often in conversation.
Yeah. I wish I could say that. No, I'm just a man of leisure.
Man of leisure. Superhero landing. Let's talk about the action. My goodness.
And there are fight scenes in this movie. You know, Mitch Hedberg has a joke where he talks about his jokes, and then he clogs up the mic cable, and then he lets it go, and a whole bunch of jokes come out at once. This has been me with Cutthroat Island for years, so I'm sorry if I'm talking a lot. I know I am, and I'll calm down. But it's just, like, there's moments where Geena Davis knows, like, six pieces of like, choreography. This isn't edited into oblivion, and you see her sword fighting, and that's a Renny Harlin staple. Like, Jay and I learned that on Deep Blue Sea. Like, he wants his actors in the action.
Yeah.
I actually read a thing of the same piece from the Independent where they're like, she's not athletic enough to be any good. And I was like, man, this is mean.
If I was wearing a hat, that comment would make me take off my hat and throw it down on the ground in anger. Outrageous. And this is, again, everything I've learned about action, I learned from Wesley Snipes. Action sequences, hand-to-hand fight combat, please pull the camera back, shoot the whole thing on a master. if you have your actors going through stunt training, please let me see them perform the stunts and the combat training. Let me see the fight from beginning to end. I'm not interested in you taking the camera and shoving it inside the fight, Paul Greengrass. I don't need to feel like I'm there. I'm not interested in pretending to be
I don't want
a fighter.
To be there.
Yeah. Please,
it's a fight.
Pull the camera back, spend more money on steady cams and tripods. Let me just watch the fight sequence from beginning to end. Also, Paul W.S. Anderson with the first Mortal
yes,
Kombat.
Yes, Mortal Kombat, the Please. Final fight, yes.
Yes, pull the camera back. Let me watch the whole thing start to finish. Blade 2 with, hey, Guillermo del Toro, you going to argue with him about this? No. This movie does that. You get to see these fight sequences from a distance. You get to see the whole thing. And there are, and then when the actor is in it, you can be like, I think that's really the actor because I'm watching the whole thing start to finish and it's not edited and cut 1,000 times.
Amen.
Sorry, yes, action yes. rant.
I kept saying that to my wife, Megan. I kept going, that's them on the chariot. Matthew Modine, not chariot, carriage. Like, that'd be interesting, a chariot. Matthew Modine is... Like when she was on top fighting, he's the one driving it. Like, I don't steering it. I don't know if you drive a carriage, but what do you call that? Do you drive a carriage? What's the word for that?
How do you locomote a carriage?
Yeah. That's...
Well, someone has to drive it and then someone rides in it. So I guess you do both.
But I guess he's steering it.
Yeah, because it's the horses are pulling it.
Yeah.
You're not riding the horse. You're.
I mean, but. That sequence.
But he was on it. He was on it.
Yes.
And those explosions that were happening, there's a wide shot where three random explosions break out. And it's just, if you can see him on it.
With explosions behind them and four yes. Come on.
There's a reason why Frank Langella says that this and Masters of the Universe are his favorite movies. Like, he just, like, he's in the action. Like, he's such a cool villain. And
he's having a blast in this film. Right? Langella is
he's
screaming at this guy. He's yelling at everyone. He's eating as much scenery as it isn't being destroyed. He's my highlight of the whole thing. I loved every scene. Every time he's on screen, he's like, yes! Dog's back! Let's go!
And that's a sweet sleeveless shirt that he's wearing, too. Like, he looks cool in this movie.
He looks like a badass leather pirate wandering around the Caribbean. Look at the plot of this, air quotes. The plot of this, the idea of, okay, there's a map to a treasure. Standard, right? Pirate movie basic. That there's three pieces, that each of the brothers has a piece, and that the whole point of this is let's collect the pieces and find the treasure. I love it. Very straightforward, very basic, easy to grasp, and then let's fill the rest in with action.
Oh no! And what even let's flavor that with like one of the maps. It's on a guy's head.
Yes.
And so the opening scene it's off screen, but Gina Davis has to shave and then scalp her father. And then you have this human scalp skin for the rest of the film. It keeps being tossed around, and everyone's like looking at it. This is perfectly normal. There's no problem here. This is clearly a human head.
I feel like this is a good point to bring up that I've seen the movie The Pillow Book, which I don't know if either of
you have seen. I've seen The Pillow Book twice.
I hate it so much, and I'm angry that I saw it, so I feel the need to bring it up whenever I feel like it's applicable. There you go.
Well, it's on the 1001 Movies list. I watched it once with the intention to review it. Didn't review it. Watched it a second time with the intention to review it. Still have not reviewed it, which means I'm probably...
What can you say about it?
Probably going to have to watch it again, or just try and use my notes and a year's worth of memory. Since
it's the only thing.
Yeah.
The color indigo is splendid.
I say
that often. It's from that frickin' movie, but my goodness. In any case, yes, creating readable items out of people's skin. There you go. If you're not sure why I brought up The Pillow Book, there you go.
And then the second part of the map is this is the one I had more of a problem with. It's in a barrel that's housing some eels in a location that is full of barrels. There's so many barrels, and most of them get destroyed, including that one, during a fight. And like, how often does a fight break out here and these barrels get destroyed and he has to get that map found and remade? He gets to contact a carpenter to do it, to engrave it again? I don't know. That seemed odd to have one done on a bit of barrel, but fine. It's a fun film.
The idea of these maps, I mean, they're not in easy places. So these guys were really considering, we're just going to hang on to this until we die.
But then Langella is just round his neck. He's got no imagination. Tattoo it to your head.
He knew from the beginning that he was going to steal the whole treasure for himself.
Yes, true. And his one is the detail one when you get to the island that leads you to the treasure from the island. He just doesn't know where the island is. So,
do we know the order of these three brothers? Is he the oldest?
I don't think it was ever specified.
That's a great question.
It's not really important, but I just wondered if you're the oldest, you get to dictate. I get the easy part of the map. You're not putting it on my scalp.
Those other guys looked in much much worse shape than him, right? So that's a good
maybe
question.
He's the youngest.
Maybe. But he's also just Langella, so maybe he's just in shape anyway.
He's the best. You remember when he dated Whoopi Goldberg for a while?
Wait, what?
Langella did?
Is that right, or am I making that
up? Well, she dated Danson, too. Ted Danson.
Yes, I knew that.
Let me just check to see if I'm making this up.
But I gotta tell you, one of my favorite moments in this movie is this when he goes, I love this! Like, it's just... Oh,
this is what
good
you
moment.
Were saying for the whole...
Wikipedia agrees that he was Whippy 96 to 2001. So just after making this film.
They met on the movie Eddie, and then they were dating for a while, and then, yes, there you go.
Oh, they made Eddie together, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Eddie is a pretty fun movie.
Yeah, she becomes a basketball coach, right?
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'm familiar with this one.
Whoopi Goldberg had a very underappreciated run in the 80s and 90s. I don't think people realize how much money... I don't think people realize how much money Sister Act made. And then...
I think people do. I think Sister Act is the one people do.
Yeah.
What about before that? What about Jumpin' Jack Flash?
She was a brand.
Anyway,
people need to appreciate that. But also I want to say, I love how Dog has Snellgrave, the guy with the, like, one arm. And then he also has Toussaint, who's, like, another villain that I thought was pretty cool. And then I love that the good guys, they have their own crew, like Mr. Glasspool, Mr. Blair, Rex Lynn, who's in Cliffhanger.
Mr. Glasspool, Stan Shaw from Daylight.
Oh, nice!
George from Daylight.
Yeah. It's a key to a pirate movie. If you have a good pirate movie, yes, you need your lead pirate and then your villain. But you must also have a believable crew around your lead pirate that you can also be like, well, I enjoy this crew.
Yeah. It's the problem I had with The Abyss last week, where the crew on that one, pretty forgettable for the most part. They all look very similar for the most part. Whereas here, everyone here, they all, a lot of them are dressed the same when they're aboard the pirate ship. Suddenly it's just this kind of sea of brown across the clothing. But they all have different looks to them, or different, like Mark said, one of them hasn't got an arm. He's got a giant chain. Like, he's that guy from Hellboy 2.
Mr.
Wink.
Mr. Wink,
yes,
I want to say.
That's right. I was like, wait, that guy is also Mr. Something.
I do love the memorable characters, and you can kind of just see them by the look of them. I think, okay, it's that guy. You can tell them apart, but they come in all dressed the same, which we couldn't do last week on The Abyss. So.
And Captain Trotter, I like him a lot, too. He's hilarious, and just, you know, there's not much money in the army, and he becomes a pirate, and then they make him go do work for 12 hours, like he has to go look out or something. But I love, this movie's filled to the brim with just likable characters, explosions, and do you think, while watching this movie is so wildly earnest and unpretentious that I think people can start making fun of it because of that. Like, if you go into this to watch it ironically, you could see some of these line readings as clumsy, or, you know, moments as kind of clumsy. But I think that might work against it, because there's really no irony in this movie at all. So
that's just it. I don't think, because I think the questioning the acting has been part of the belittlement of this movie, and I don't think you can. I think they're just being like, yeah, I'm just going to read this line and then go through this explosion. So,
and also, I got to tell you all a funny story. I'm all over the place with this movie. I'm pinballing, but the costume designer, this is kind of a funny story. Enrico Sabatini, Renny Harlin on the commentary said that he made such good costumes. Like, everything was just how it would have been. You had to tie up your laces. But at the end, when they're dropping the pirates into the water, the guy who took over Morgan's boat,
Jimmy Skaggs.
But it's Skaggs.
That's the actor's name, Jimmy Skaggs.
The boots were so good, though. They were like knee high, waist high, and a lot of them were so good that a lot of water got sucked into them, and so all the stuntmen started screaming for help. And, like, Rennie Harlan and his crew thought, like, oh, they're just acting. But then it turns out they were actually kind of sinking because their shoes wouldn't, like, it's like they couldn't take their shoes off and they were filling up with water. So there's just a bunch of drowning stuntmen that they had to go rescue because their boots were too official to take off and they collected a lot of water and they were sinking. But I think that's kind of a funny story about that. So the boots had so much detail, they almost drowned stuntmen.
Not many films can say that.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is I kind of had forgotten this movie came before Long Kiss Goodnight. I think I kind of in my brain assumed Long Kiss Goodnight came first. Because that...
Another beautiful
maybe not,
movie.
Fantastic movie. Maybe not better, but probably more successful.
Definitely more successful,
I thought it came first and then this... I thought this led to their divorce. It did not!
You know, they had a wild... They had, like, hot air balloons at their wedding and, like, elephants.
Of course they did.
And that just
Would
makes
you
me
expect sad. Any less from Rennie Harlan?
That's a great point. No. Not at all. And also with this movie and Long Kiss Goodnight, there was really, like, in the 90s, there weren't that many, like, female-led action films.
And that's just it, right? Because if you read all the bits and... trivia about this movie that so many times there were things said and people went, well, it's got a female lead, so female-led action movies won't be six, which is not at all the case. And again, it's nonsense anytime someone tries to bring that up. A good movie is a good movie regardless of who's in the lead. And I think, as you mentioned, that thing with Michael Douglas, like not wanting to be a co-lead, wanting to be his own lead. And so that's a piece of it, too. I love that Gina Davis is the lead of this movie, period. Matthew Modine is the sidekick.
Yeah, he's the dude in distress.
Exactly. Yeah. I love the gender reversal. Normally, like he is perpetually being captured and stuck and jammed underneath something and in need of rescue. Yep. And she's what he rescues needing him every time.
Yep.
They take this. I love in the first time when we meet him, he's robbing everybody, and then he goes to make this big jump, and you think he's going to pull a Captain Jack Sparrow and escape, but he just jumps down and gets cornered by more people.
He just jumps down into people.
And then he gets slapped on the back of the head. The guy's like, you idiot, and he smacks him in the back of the head for doing it.
Yeah. He is terrible. He is a con man and a swindler and terrible at both.
Because he was poor. He grew up poor.
There you go. Character development. Excellent. Moving on.
I know this sounds bad, but I like when actors don't take their ego into a role. Mm-hmm. Because in this one, you know, there's a scene where there's a big fight breaking out in a bar, and he goes, Morgan, and he throws her a sword.
Yeah.
Like, he knows she'll do the damage.
Yep.
But I know I shouldn't applaud somebody for being selfless in their roles, but a lot of people don't do that. So it's kind of nice to see something like this. It's refreshing.
Are you perhaps referencing some actors who have things in their contracts where none of them are allowed to lose a fight now?
Oh, absolutely. I love that franchise so much that I refuse to say it. But yeah, they don't lose. They don't like. And then
he can fight 30 people and a building, and it's a tie.
In the building, in the fall, it's a tie. And the only thing that happens is you get a flashback to key plot points.
I just love this movie when he jumps down and then just gets caught by more people. It just made, and then you rarely see that. Someone's like, I'm going to make a daring escape, and they just get smacked in the back of the head.
Yeah, it's
for
great.
Being annoying. Beautiful.
Yeah, it truly establishes him as the subsidiary, secondary character, which is wonderful.
Oh, gosh, I love it. And then, but like, also, too, he's involved in a lot of the stunts as well, and he said he loved being on set. Like, they just got to jump off massive boats. They only built one boat, and they would redecorate it to be the good and bad boat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. Like a $1 million boat.
Right, and they saved money by hiring him, because after Douglas dropped out, they hired Modine because he was already a qualified fencer.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, I'm glad you read that. And remember that scene where he's fighting? Like, you got to kill him. He's like, well, we never got that
far. Got that.
The best.
And then, okay, this is a movie where they introduce weird eels as like a torture device.
Yes,
these
weird eels.
These eels, this barrel that they're in explodes. They get loose, and during the fight scene, you see an eel bite. I had to pause it. An eel is biting a guy's leg, and the guy's going, he's like shaking his leg with the eel that escaped from earlier latched onto him. And it's That's the kind of movie this is. They introduce a weird torture device, eels. Those eels get loose, and as a throwaway gag during a brawl,
there's
you
eels.
See it biting a guy. And the guy's jumping around going, oh my gosh! Oh, it's so good.
Fantastic.
Did Nothing you see that scene when the eel was doing that or no?
I'm going to have to go back and watch that.
It's hilarious. The eel's biting a guy, and he's like, oh my gosh!
I love that someone on set was like, you know what, let's not forget about the eels.
Yeah, we bought them, we might as well attach them to somebody for a good gag here.
It's going to be the eel puppeteer. He's like, well, what are the eels doing in this scene? They've got to be doing something. They've got to be in the fight, just go! So that in that scene, that's when she's meeting up with the second map owner, her other uncle. I was watching that scene, I was thinking, it felt odd. I don't know who the actor is who played him, but he didn't seem... No offense to the guy, he didn't seem to be filling the role. I just made a note of it, he just seemed like lesser. And
he seems stationary?
Yeah, but that role was supposed to be Oliver Reed. Which made a lot of sense to me, they meant to have somebody more Oliver Reed in this role, and that would have been wonderful, but he got so drunk and mooned Gina Davis on set that they fired him. So,
That'll do it. Yeah,
yeah, that'll do it. I feel like the film did suffer because of this, but I completely understand their reasoning and don't blame them at all. That's not how you behave in civil society.
I love that story. I remember reading that, just like, geez Louise.
That's all of a read for you. Unprofessional to the dust.
but I don't know. You watch this movie, and Rennie Harlan just said that it was like his dream come true. And like you said, you see everything in this movie. There's even a scene where a barrel lands on Modine's head and they kept it in. Did you see that?
Yes, like this.
Oh my gosh. but the actors are in the explosions.
Nothing wasted.
And there's just...
nothing wasted.
If yeah, we're going
to spend the most money that anyone has ever spent, we're going to use every single piece of it.
See that throw barrel? A barrel at Modine. We're going to do it.
Yeah. Drop that barrel on Modine's head.
That's why Michael Douglas dropped out, because he's going to get hit with a barrel. I'm not doing that.
Not again. And when they finally get to the cave with the treasure, when they're on the ropes and they're swinging back and forth, I know they probably digitally erased some safety lines, but I'm telling, it's just so nice to see actors hanging off of ropes. And it's just
practical stunt work. Practical.
Yeah. And, I don't know if you saw 12 Rounds. I love what Rennie Harlan did with John Cena, where he had Cena driving all the time. And, Cena, does most of his own driving in that. It's just fun seeing him in it. So, and he tortured... Cena's afraid of heights, and he tortured Cena on that movie. Watch the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's on the schedule. We're going to get to that soon.
Oh, yeah, you and Aaron are talking about
it. Yeah. Oh. I don't think I've
seen soon. That yet. Well, you've got if you want to listen to the podcast, you've got at least a few months.
All right.
It's good. It's, I don't know. It's just a good $20 million action film that Rennie Harlan pulled out every trick in the book to make it as expansive as possible. And that's fun. It's good.
I can't help but wonder how much of the budget was those animatronic eels.
Yeah.
He's just preparing for Deep Blue Sea.
They have the shovel. This is a movie with shovel fights, sword fights, eel fights.
Cannon fights.
And I love that
the old
line.
Gunpowder trick, gunpowder from a barrel, lighting with a candle.
There's a lot of gunpowder in that gun.
I wonder if Mythbusters should have maybe gotten a hold of this movie and done all of it.
Oh, that'd be great. Just a whole season on Cutthroat Island?
Yes. And do eels really do this? Can you really set gunpowder ablaze in a trail with a candle? Can you... all of it. Just...
I love the guy that goes exploding from the bars.
Carriage past explosions.
Oh, just do it. They've done Deep Blue Sea, right?
Yeah, they did the shark explosion.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love that show, but also these movies, this Cutthroat Island does not take place in this world. This is another world that this takes place in. Or just there's a lot of stuntmen doing flips over boats. Which I love. I need to count the amount of flips in this movie because there's stuntmen flying every. I love that the gunpowder gag when it does explode, a random guy goes flying in the air.
The old launch a stunt guy.
If I worked on this, I got launched on the set of Cutthroat Island. That'd be kind of fun. I don't know, but it's I keep saying the same thing over and over, but I do think the rear projection scene when they're in the carriage, that does not look very good.
Oh, I guess if I had to, but I mean, 95. What do you?
Yeah,
want?
It's 26 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. That's the one thing. I've heaped it so full of praise that I wanted to like bring one thing up.
Acknowledge that there's a flaw.
Yeah,
we could talk about flaws. I mean,
oh, they're there, right?
Yeah,
it's just
there's too much slow motion. Is my first one. Oh, little too much slow mo.
A little too much slow mo.
during the carriage chase when they get separated and Morgan's going through the shop above the kind of archway and Modine's going along the bottom. They put slow motion on that. I think that's to throw off that if they hadn't put slow motion on, she would be running through a building at the same speed as four charging horses dragging a carriage, and which would be tricky. But
yes,
that,
you do the math on that.
She's very fast. She's very fast.
4 horsepower.
Indeed. But yeah, there's a little too much slow-mo in a film that is quite long. It's almost two hours.
Too long.
It's a little too long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I did look up on Wikipedia, this film is listed as being 2 hours and 4 minutes, and my DVD cut in the UK is 1 hour 57.
Oh.
So there's something is missing. I don't know why, how, what happened there. It could be the same thing as like the Temple of Doom we talked about last week, with the heart ripping out scene being taken out. If there's some more goriness taken out of this film that I didn't get to watch, I don't know.
But does on your DVD does Dog have a song and dance number?
That must be it. He didn't. I did feel like Langella was like a very. It was a real performance. He'd be missing somewhere. They were referring to that somewhere. That's a shame.
Yeah, Jeanette, you have it on the
That's
American.
Right, absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he sings A Pirate's Life for Me.
Mm-hmm. And then yeah. There was a lawsuit because you can't sing a Disney song in a non-Disney movie.
Yeah, another lawsuit from this movie. It's a whole thing.
He's like, so good in this. I just have to mention that again.
What role is he better in? Masters of the Universe or Skeletor?
Oh, boy.
Dropping bombs on people.
That's a really tough call because Masters of the Universe is a mess, but he is great in it.
He's so good. I love his line. He drops the best lines. It makes me so happy.
Movie Draft Day.
I've never seen that movie. Is that the Costner one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
Jennifer Garner.
Yeah. Well, she's barely in it. Let me.
What does Langella do in Draft Day?
He plays a commissioner or an owner or a head boss guy of something or other.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's an Ivan Reitman movie, and it's better than it's also like the first time I saw Chadwick Boseman. So it's if you haven't seen it, it's very well done and certainly very interesting, which is hard to believe about a movie that's about the NFL draft. Also features Dennis Leary as the coach of the Cleveland Browns. So, you know, don't sleep on Draft Day.
Sold.
So the only one I can think of is Robot and Frank, but has Langella ever played a good guy? His filmography isn't one I'm overly familiar with. I've never seen Masters of the Universe, one of them.
Oh, you gotta watch that.
Dolph Lundgren in a loincloth.
Well, he's bad in Trial of Chicago 7.
Yep, yeah. Yes, very much so. He's
you know,
horrible.
I was reading about that judge from that show, and like that's I think the judge might even be worse than like what he played him as. I guess that's a really interesting read. I don't know if you ever read about that movie.
No, but, they had to tone him down. People wouldn't believe how terrible he is. Oh, dear.
He's in Muppets Most Wanted.
He's bad in that. I'm
Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
Because he's very evil in Frost Nixon.
Plays Perry White in that. Superman Returns.
Oh yes, of course.
I'm sorry I mentioned it.
Yeah.
He's in Small Soldiers.
Wait, what?
Mm-hmm. Wait, he's a good guy in Eddie, right?
Oh, he voices Archer.
Oh, yes.
He voices
okay,
a good
yeah.
guy in Small Soldiers. Of course he does.
What about Junior, where Arnold Schwarzenegger has a baby, and he's in Dave? Oh, he's a bad guy in Dave, I think. I'm just going through IMDb looking at Frank Langella.
He's the head of the review board in Junior. Which probably means he's a bad guy.
What we're saying is that he really definitely specializes in villains.
He has a type. And he's very good at it.
He murders that guy, like, we don't have enough food. Well, we're better now. And then just, and then when that one guy,
need fewer mouths to feed.
Skags.
The absolute, the definition of a guy having a good time at work. Like, yeah. He is having a blast in this movie.
Mark, if you go through and do count how many flips, can you count how many throats are cut in Cutthroat Island? Because it is certainly more
there
than
are,
one.
Yeah, there's wow. definitely some throat cutting.
And
happening.
He had his throat cut, because you see the scar.
Yeah.
Does that count? Does that happen on screen?
But that's true. That's rude. How many throat cuts are in Cutthroat Island?
It's something I wanted to look at.
This is, yeah, I'm going to need to see the Excel chart that lists. All right.
Any excuse to watch this movie again. That sounds wonderful. And also, I love the lines. Like, I love when they're walking by the giant lizard on the island. And Gina Davis is like, hey, Bowen. So like, yeah, kill that thing. We're going to eat it for dinner. Like, that's just such a random, funny line. I think this movie just has this cheeky lines like that, that I don't know. I mean, Ebert liked it, but I guess how do you watch? What do you think people hate about this movie so much? Like, why? So this was only in the theaters for 3 weeks and then it got pulled. Like nowadays, like if you watch this movie and hate it or you feel like you're just too good for it, what is it about this movie to not like? Does that make sense? Like, what are people...
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think maybe some of the writing and some of the lines, we've talked about how it can feel a little forced here and there, and I think that's just because they're just delivering what's there. And honestly, this movie may have even worked better as a silent movie. Like, the words don't matter. It's not necessary. It's a visual action movie. That's a really good question. Like, why hate this? There's so many other things out there you can hate for good reasons.
Absolutely.
Why hate something like this that's delivering a whole lot of action and adventure and not asking anything from you? It's not asking you to commit or be morally changed or invest in any of the characters or even engage with them. It's just there to purely entertain you. So I don't know why people hate it.
I'd assumed that maybe it was a fault in marketing. Cause I wasn't sure who this film would be aimed at. Because it's a pirate action adventure film, which you kind of think that's like a family-friendly kids thing. But then there's a human scalp. And there's like rotting skeletons dotted throughout the film being picked at by vultures and things.
But honestly, aren't those some of the same things that are then in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies and they're beloved by everyone young to old?
There's a whole skeleton crew in that
film. Exactly. So where did this movie go wrong and that movie go right? Because I think we can agree that movie is a huge success.
Absolutely.
And I will admit, the first one, Curse of the Black Pearl, is beautiful.
Hey, I love the
top
first
to bottom,
three.
Sorry. That's a bold statement.
I like more
that's
of those films statement. Than most people do.
Yes.
I have a fun video coming out about Jack Sparrow. Just want to give everyone a heads up for film theory. I've been watching these movies a lot, the Pirates films, and I just want you to know it's about something about dehydration. I think everyone's going to love it.
I will tell you, it took me a minute to go, once I started watching Titans, to be like, why does this dude look so familiar to me? Why do I know this Robin? Yeah. I know this Robin. Why do I know that? Oh, he's from that terrible Pirates movie that I barely remember that had mermaids.
Wait, that's the fourth one, right?
Is it?
Yeah, the fourth one is the one with mermaids. That one is like with, that
Sam
one's
Claflin?
Unwatchable.
It is unwatchable, but he's in that, and now he's the best Dick Grayson I've seen since Burt Ward, God bless him.
I like the fifth one with the zombie sharks.
Did I even see the fifth one?
Brendan Thwaites. He's in the fifth one with Kea Scolidario Crawl.
That's her.
Yeah, because the fourth one is Sam Claflin and a lady.
Which one is Penelope Cruz?
That's the fourth one
fourth
as well.
Fourth one.
Yeah.
Because that one had Ian McShane, and fifth one had
Javier Bardem.
Yes,
I could come up with Spanish half face guy. You knew what I meant.
I had a guy from that. Yeah, Astrid Burgess Frisby is the female lead in the female love interest of Sam Claflin in the fourth one.
Yes. Okay. Let's run the numbers on that too, Mark. Well, you're running numbers. Run the numbers on why this one doesn't work, but Curse of the Black Pearl does. Because clearly, people are of the general consensus that this does not and that does, and I want to know what the difference is, because I feel like there's a lot of similarities.
And you know what one thing could be is that, you know, you had Jack Sparrow in there, but you also had that romance between Bloom and Keira Knightley. And this one, this one doesn't really have a romance per se. I mean, okay. I think Morgan sort of just treats Shaw as kind of like a plaything, like a
That's a good point.
Little guy to have around. And there's what's up?
Is it the female lead? Is it that most film critics at the time were men and didn't want a female lead? Is that a possibility?
So I do. I read a lot of reviews for my job, and I had to study Long Kiss Goodnight for an episode, and I've been studying this. And I'm telling the narrative. And I also look at, I'm covering Underworld franchise, and we also covered Resident Evil.
Oh, and yeah.
The narrative, very much so in reviews and comment boards, are that, oh, like, these are just like, they just wanted their wives in a movie. Like, so.
Okay, so it's good old-fashioned sexism. That's what it is.
I absolutely believe it, because the crazy thing is Mila Jovovich wasn't with Paul W. Sanderson the first one. Kate Beckinsale was not with Len Wiseman in the first Underworld. But then they're like, oh, they just wanted their wives in movies. And in this one, you know, this was such a – I mean, this budget was over $100 million. It only made $10 million. Michael Douglas dropped out. But, yeah, I mean, there all these people – there's really a negative – response. You read comments about this, and then Long Kiss Goodnight, which, you know, Sam Jackson says it's his favorite character of all time. I think it's
a
wildly fun film. He's another dude in distress in that movie.
The quotes in that movie that what she didn't realize is that I'm always frank and earnest with women. In New York, I'm frank, and in New Jersey, I'm
earnest.
Come on. And I literally said to somebody the other day, did you want me to turn on the air conditioner? It doesn't work, but it makes a very loud noise that distracts from the heat.
Yeah.
Which, of course, in the movie is flipped because he's talking about the heater, but oh my God, that movie is perfect. And yeah, so.
The narrative, though, was just like, oh, Rennie Harlan and his wife, like, he's just putting his wife in there and it's all, like, excess. And, I mean, you do look at movies of that age, like 95, and it wasn't really until, 2001 with Charlie's Angels, Tomb Raider with Angelina Jolie, which, if you watch Tomb Raider again, it's really refreshing her portrayal. She's just sort of the ultimate. She's like using sled dogs to escape like a massive nuclear bomb and an ancient deity, and she's just chilling, smiling.
I like that first one.
Yeah, it's so good. And I think that's when those movies started making a lot of money. And then like this one though wasn't.
You know, going back and looking at it, it might be why I love this movie so much. Growing up a fan of action movies in the 80s, and I've said this, with the rampant sexism, where female characters in those movies were barely characters, and how every single one had to include the PTS, which we're still barely away from that. No one needs a pointless tit shot. You really don't. It has nothing to do with anything. But think about it. Every 80s action movie you love, how many PTSs are
Commando,
in there?
Like that scene in Commando.
Hell, there was one in The Abyss last week.
Demolition Man.
Yep. All of them. And literally where it has nothing to do with anything, just like, boom, tits, there you go. It's so frustrating when you're just like, can I just watch an action movie and not have to be like, here's some tits. Great.
Jeanette, please can you start an 80s action movie podcast called Boom Tits, There You Go.
You should.
It's a pretty good title. So, yeah, I feel like for me, seeing this movie, because all those others you just mentioned, the Resident Evil franchise, I don't like horror movies, and I never played that video game. That's a lie. I tried it once, was like, this is too scary, I'm done.
Same.
But I love the franchise. And the Underworld, but yes, when you have to watch all these movies because you love action movies and there's no decent female characters, and then you get a series or a couple where there's strong female lead for no, not pandering, not catering, not just, hey, just female action hero, boom. I love it and needed that. I just saw The Protégé last week, which is getting panned for various.
Oh, I hear it's good. Well, I hear it's really fun.
I really enjoyed it. I really liked it.
Maggie Q's cool, and I've been wondering why she hasn't been
really
bigger.
Long time, and so anyway, yes, and it's just occurring to me when you say this that that's probably one of the reasons I love this is it has a female hero for no reason, like just Female hero. That's it.
Not based on an IP. She's not stuffed like Beckinsale, you know, owned the role, but she's not stuffed in like a leather outfit, you know, like she's just a pirate. And you know, there's not much development too. Like she doesn't
We can talk about the underworld fetish type outfits for a whole that's a whole separate issue. You know, Kate Beckinsale was that's her job. She needs the tight leather because she has to be out there hunting werewolves. Look, it's fine. You can't battle lichens in flowy outfits.
Cows hate vampires because in the underworld movie, the amount of leather that the vampires wear, every vampire has leather.
But is it real or is it fake leather? I mean,
hers was made out of like a condom esque material. That's what Kate Beckinsale explained it as. But yeah, I guess they're inferring that it's leather. But you look at like Bill Nighy's jacket. Everyone is wearing leather in it. So it's
his outfits in that movie.
Oh, so is it Bill cows Nighy. Hate vampires or do vampires hate cows?
It could be a little bit. Or do vampires eat cows if they're out of people?
Yeah. It's a great question.
Can we talk about
vampires don't eat people?
Anyway, going back.
But Gina Davis's character though, at the end of this movie, she's still just kind of cool. She's Morgan. Yeah, remember in the beginning, she's drinking. She's like, I thought I'd be passed out by now. And she doesn't have to change anything about her. She doesn't have to get a makeover or be someone different or learn how to lead. Yeah, she was always just a leader.
Or Wonder Woman fall in love with a man in order to realize her own godhood. What?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
She's like this one. She's just like Matthew Modine is just he's probably, you know, he doesn't have scurvy. His teeth are fine. Like, you know,
he can
like
speak Latin and fence.
Decent hair. And so she's like, all right, I might as well have
perfectly
some fun while I have a
concubine.
While I have a bullet wound in me. Like, we'll just chat and hang out.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know.
She starts the movie as a badass pirate. She ends the movie as a badass pirate without compromising any of that for anything else. Yeah.
Exactly. You just said it much more eloquently. And also, too, like, you don't have the whole, like, you know, you can't be a captain because you're a woman. Like, they really leave all that alone, too. Like, they really avoid. And at the end, when she's fighting Langella, the whole crew's just watching, like, come on, Captain.
Yeah.
It's a...
Well, and there's one scene where once her father, because she takes her father's boat, right, after she scalps him, and she goes back to the boat and is like, well, I'm taking control. Here's my sword. Anyone who wants to challenge me, go ahead and draw the... None of them do. They're all just like, boom, Captain, let's do it. Boom, tits.
There you go.
BTS. Wait, is that what it was? BTS?
Pointless.
BTS. A pointless.
Because there are, now listen, this, again, you can run the numbers on this. There are some tit shots that are not pointless, and I would give you only one example because I can only think of one, Terminator. In the first Terminator movie, there is a tit shot during the love scene, but that is the only point, the only movie I can think of where that love scene is key to the plot because that love scene leads to John Connor, which leads to him going back, which leads to the love scene. So in that movie... Only that movie will I accept that the tit shot matters to the story. Every other action movie in the 80s, the tit shot is pointless.
So it's Under an
Siege.
NTS.
Look about Under Siege. She pops out of the cake for no damn reason. Die Hard! Die Hard is the perfect action
movie. Oh, yeah, when but you know what's
interesting? There's a picture on the wall of tits.
Yeah, and that lady, too. Remember when they drag her out of the room?
Yes!
And then,
yes.
But I guess they didn't need that scene, but... I guess all the henchmen saw that and took their attention away from McClane because of that. But you could have written something else. Like, you could have had a fist fight or something.
I feel like the magazine cover is almost acceptable in Die Hard. It's not up to me to judge. But I would, if it were, I would say that one, because that is a memorable point for him to mark a location on. And what's he going to remember more than tits?
I will allow that makes sense, but the girl getting dragged out of the room.
Yeah,
that...
that's PTS.
Okay, what is it again? I keep thinking Z.
PTS.
And the Terminator has NTS, necessary tit shot.
Necessary tit shot. Yes.
And then BTS is beguiling.
Yes.
Well, now you have all the details to write the tit shot article that you are preparing.
That's an article I'll probably never write because it's like, Mark, like, did you really write this article?
That's movies, films, and flicks off the dock.
Yeah, it's the. Oh man, movies that feature more boobs.
Yeah, it's
like, man, you're gross.
It's
nothing but Kate Winslet films. Oh, Winslet all the time.
All right, back. Like, I think we were onto something though with this movie, where it doesn't have, like, the world's not in any danger. You have just three uncles. There's a quick treasure hunt. You have a guy who's quite bumbling, and he's just. And then you have a cool crew. There's no.
It is just pirates out for treasure.
Yeah, that should be the title: Pirates Hunting for Treasure.
I heard a podcast where they were complaining that they didn't understand what anyone's motivation was in this film. It's like, they're pirates.
Treasure.
There's a big stack of gold somewhere. Well, what do you want?
Yeah, Jesus. They're pirates.
Yeah, she wants, like, she pitches this whole idea because it's her boat now, and so she wants everyone to kind of rally around that. Yeah. And they're pirates. Like, why? Oh, man. So someone said they don't understand their motive. See,
right.
That's the narrative that I think has killed this movie.
That person didn't understand pirates. There are... All right, let me reference the TV show Expedition Unknown with Josh Gates, which I love. It is... Are you guys familiar with the show?
No.
Oh, my God. Expedition Unknown is hosted by Josh Gates. It is TV archaeology, where Josh will pick a different legend or treasure or some sort of history thing and then explore it for that week. And when I say TV archaeology, like, it's, we're looking at the buried treasure of this pirate for this week, and we're going to – here's where the clues are, and these people are searching for treasure. And he goes out with, you know, metal detector, and, you know, every episode is like, oh, my God, there's something here. Cut to commercial, come back. It's a rock. Every time. He never finds anything, but it's super entertaining. There are so many episodes in which he deals with pirate treasure. The reason pirate movies keep getting made is because pirates only were after treasure, and so many of them sank because they were constantly battling each other. So there's bunches of treasure out there. So I don't know why anyone would be like, but why are they doing this? Because they're pirates and they're after treasure.
Yeah, it was a frustrating podcast to listen to, and that's what I'll say. Yeah, so I did love the climax of this film where, with the marker barrel, I wanted the deleted scene of them swimming down and somehow retrieving the treasure, so I just wanted to see how. I just want to see how. I believe they could do it. Just want to see it. Because a lot of that stuff looked very heavy.
Pirates were constantly burying their... You bury your treasure on an island, you don't put it underwater, because how do you get it out of
exactly.
water?
Exactly, yeah. But I did like... Do you think... Okay, what was written first? The kill-off line, bad dog, or Langella's character being called dog? Which one came first?
Oh, man.
that's a tough call. Boy. You're saying... Wait, who wrote this? Did Renny Harlin write this, or did he... pick it up from somewhere
else. There's five credited writers on this movie.
Story by Michael Frost, Beckner, James Dolan, Bruce Evans.
Idea that Renny Harlin was laying in bed and was dreaming of a pirate movie and was like, you know what would be a great last line? Bad dog. You know what? The bad guy's name is Dog. Now, admittedly, that's probably not what happened, but I love that idea.
Yeah.
I want to get the answer to that. When we eventually interview Renny Harlin, we need to ask him about that. And also, I want to ask Paul Feige about, have you seen the movie Spy?
Yes.
You know when Melissa McCarthy calls Rose Byrne you look like a slutty dolphin trainer?
Yeah.
I want to know if that line was written and they found that dress, or if that was an improv. Because I would love it if he wrote that line and then they had to go find a dress to make her look like a slutty dolphin trainer.
I'd actually rather it be the other way around. Because it feels like if they write that line and then make a dress that looks like that, then that's fulfilling their own joke. And that's less funny.
Melissa McCarthy's background, I feel like that's probably an improv on her part.
Yeah. It's like I love the film Kiss Kiss Bang Bang with Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
Val Kilmer.
Yes.
But the scene when they're in the bar and it's like, okay, over there with Native American Joe Pesci. I was like, well, hang on, you've just found a guy who looks like Joe Pesci. And made him look a bit Native American all the way around. He didn't stumble across a guy and think, oh, that guy looks like a Native American Joe Pesci. They've done something. There's movie trickery involved, and it annoys me a little bit that scene's in there.
I kind of hope, though. I guess we're opposite on this, because I wish that they made that. Like, I love like, I love Wes Anderson films. Like, I love the production design in it. And, like, Edgar Wright writes everything out, like, so, to everything. So I just love it that they were like, all right, we need to find a slutty dolphin trainer dress. Like, that's – I would like to be the costume department person hunting for that. Man, like, what are you doing today, Mark? Well, I got to find a
At dress what point do you give up and make one?
Yeah, I got to make her look like a slutty dolphin trainer. Sorry.
You can have spend a week looking, but after a week, make one.
Right. One question for everybody here. How strong are Dog Brown's abs? Because the cannonball that hits him. I'm not a cannonball expert.
Blast through him?
Yeah, I'm not a cannonball expert.
I mean, I did see The Patriot, you know, the movie about the American Revolution starring two Australians. And in that movie, doesn't a dude get completely blasted away with the cannonball? Doesn't it rip it through him?
Oh, yeah. Well, they rip. There's legs get ripped off. Another guy just becomes mist from one of those. Like, yeah. So yeah, that cannonball go through him. This would be like a Death Becomes Her situation.
Got mist. And then his friends were suddenly like, where did he go? No, mist is in M-I-S-T. When he gets exploded. Yeah. Just to clarify, in case people are like, I haven't seen The Patriot, which mist does he mean?
Yeah, I haven't seen The Patriot. What mist does he mean?
Hank became mist.
You don't need to.
I'm not going
to. Not need to.
It's like 2.5 hours. Jason Isaacs, though, is a good villain.
Spectacular, my God. And Adam Baldwin gave us all a preliminary to becoming like the biggest villain on the face of the earth.
Stop giving me reasons to watch this film I don't want to see.
Sorry.
But yeah, it's quite long and it's pretty brutal.
What's the name of the guy who plays the French soldier? It's not Checky Cario, it's the other one. Or is it Checky Cario? Oh boy. The Patriot. French
but yeah,
guy.
His abs though. Because that thing does not go through him. So Dog must have
Well, I feel like the cannonballs on these ships are not as powerful as I'd expect cannons to be, because you have two ships parallel to each other within firing range, no one's missing, and they're launching cannons for quite a long time, and there's not a lot happening to either. It's not until Morgan goes onto Dog's ship and blows up from the inside that anything bad actually happens. The two ships have survived a lot.
Yeah.
So maybe the cannonballs aren't... It reminded me, there's a episode of The Simpsons where like Bart's Huckleberry Finn or something, and there's a Derringer fight, and everyone's just firing Derringers at each other, and they're just bouncing off. And it reminded me of that.
Yeah,
the ship battles of the 1800s, like, just, you know, pull up side by side and fire a bunch of cannons at each other and see what happens. It's a testament to both shipbuilding skill and lack of cannon accuracy.
Yeah, if anyone wins, if anyone survives, they win.
Exactly.
If no one survives, well, it's a tie. It was Checky Cario in The Patriot. And also René Auberjonois.
Ebert, though, he did write something about this movie where he's like, I just want treasure. I want two ships pulling alongside of each other and shooting cannons at each other. I want a monkey. Yep. Like, I want... Like, he just gave a list of what Pirates movies, and he's like, Cutthroat Island has all of these.
It delivers.
Yeah.
This is the quintessential pirate film before 2003.
But it is also why there are a dozen episodes of Expedition Unknown where Josh Gates goes hunting for pirate treasure, because these pirates always had treasure on their ship, and then, you know, they pull alongside one another, blast holes into each other's ships, and sink.
And also, too, the night they one scene that's a little funky is when they're on the island and Modine steals the map from Dog, and they go to hunting for him. Rennie Harlan shot it day for night, but I don't think the transition to night was very good, so they were walking around with torches during the day, and then there were various like dark scenes. I don't know if you noticed that, but I don't think you want to shoot at night in a real jungle, because they actually went to Thailand. Like, they went to the beach where the beach was filmed. Like, this was I gotta say, the most beautiful shot in this movie is
Langella
when
squishing that tarantula in his hand. Gross.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Or when he's strutting out of the fire after the
another good shot. Like, the third best shot of this movie. But I do love when Modine's character gets walked to the beach, and then he shows up at the beach, and it's just the two guys sitting at the table with all the extras in the background. That's like a beautifully – I don't care. I'm going to say it. I love that shot. It's a beautifully framed shot. And the scene where they're rowing out to the boats, and they just do a dolly shot of how big that set was and how many boats there were. There was – like, the ships in the distance were CGI, or visual effects, but – I mean, that was a massive set that they had. Like, it was beautiful to look at. I love that shot where he sneaks him up on here. So there's some cool compositions in this movie, too. I just – okay,
The scope, the scope is believable. It is, and honestly, it's what you get when you shoot on location, right? You just mentioned they shot in a real jungle in Thailand. You can tell, I don't care how good it is, when they shoot on a soundstage and make it look like a jungle, you can tell it is not real jungle. And as much as I love Jurassic Park, sorry, Jay, as much as I love it, this, you can tell scenes in Hawaii versus scenes on the soundstage. You can tell the difference, yes, no matter how good they do. So it really does, the scope of this movie, shooting on location, it matters, and you can tell, and they do a good job.
Now, one final thing before we like get out of here, but you watch like Deadpool or Avengers Endgame, there's a lot of caustic humor and like sarcasm and that, like, people seem to love that. Like, this movie has none of it. So I wonder, I wonder if that hurts it. Like,
well, you know, sarcasm wasn't invented until 1923.
You've got Modine like going like, I don't understand how you'd need somebody to speak Latin in your life, whatever the phrase is. He's like commentating on things as he's going along, but that's about it. You haven't got every character doing it like in Marvel. You just got him, and he's been thrown into the situation. He's unused to all of this, so it kind of makes sense that he would be trying to cope with whatever mechanism he has.
Do you think that makes movies like you know M. Night Shyamalan movies? Some of even the ones I wouldn't say aren't that strong. You know, that one that like, you know, The Village, people hate on. People hate on The Happening. People hate on Lady in the Water. But he's also so earnest with his filmmaking. Like, he's very, like, yes, there are some twists, but he's very, there's just a certain openness to his movies, like that people really went after as well. So I wonder if that is something that people just don't like, or that it's easier to make fun of when a movie is just very, I take a drink every time I say earnest, but it's not P-Worrell, but it's, I wonder if that hurts some movies where they're just so, like, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, they're so tongue in cheek. They're so snarky and self-aware. Yeah, I think it has to do with the tone. And if you've decided ahead of time, well, here's the tone. Yeah, the thing about how if everyone is making quips, then no one is the straight man. And in order to have a guy that's quippy, you've got to have a guy that's the straight man. So maybe some movies overdo that.
Because, like, Rhodes in Iron Man is a definitive straight man.
Yes.
But even he has quips.
Yep.
He has many, many quips in, like, Iron Man 2.
Everyone in the... And I think what it might have been Screen Junkies Honest Trailers that pointed out where, like, Black Panther's the only one who will not quip. Everyone else is quipping.
And then when that came out, I was amongst people who were like, oh, he's kind of a boring character.
Because he won't quip.
Who's this guy? Dour.
Yeah, so this movie doesn't really have the comedian, the one character who's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to make jokes about this entire situation. No, really, you get, occasionally Shaw makes observations with question marks, but no one's quipping.
There's no Rob Schneider. And Judge Dredd dropping quips. Like that kind of character.
I feel like
a weird pull.
Or Rob Schneider in Demolition Man.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't know about the seashells.
I do feel like they could have very easily given that role to someone like Christopher Masterson, or just one of the crew, have somebody like, oh, he's always quipping. And then it just gets killed at the end. And everyone's like, oh, phew, that's fine.
Oh, the quippy guy's dead.
Yeah, maybe this movie needed that. Maybe it needed a quipster.
And also, too, none of her crew really, the main crew, get killed. I know that Rex Lynn, Mr. Blair, that's pretty gnarly how he gets his arm smashed in that thing, and then he gets saved. Like, it's kind of cool how...
By Trotter.
Yeah, you know, I love Trotter. He's when he smacks him in the back of the head. But I like that none of them have to die. We're going to sacrifice someone to make people feel things. Like, no, just keep them alive because we like them.
Well, speaking of deaths, Ainsley, the Patrick Malahide character, the kind of the British general, whatever he is, the head army guy, and then the traitor, Moray Chaikin. They both kind of disappear in an explosion in the climax.
And then they're
kind of forgotten about. And I wanted just a bit more. I wanted them to be like definitively defeated. So that was a little unsatisfying.
Yeah, they just get engulfed in flames, and then we never see them again.
When Moray Chaikin was like, I'm on this boat to research pirates to write a great novel, I was like, oh, he's going to end up being Robert Louis Stevenson. Is it going to be Treasure? Because I have no idea when that was written. I've looked it up since, and it was like 200 years later. But still, that was my first thought, was it was, this is going to end with him closing a book titled Treasure Island.
Oh, that would have been very clever.
But in terribly anachronistic.
I will say that the idea of coming back to the Ainsley and Patrick Malahide, who was ironically, I believe, just in The Protégé, the trope in a pirate movie of you got two groups of pirates going after the treasure and fighting against each other, and then yes, also the British Navy. Like, the British soldiers are always hanging around as a third interested party, a secondary villain, a plot point. So yeah, I feel like that's also there too, and would have been interesting to see a little more, but not necessary, not really the focus.
Don't need it.
Yeah.
Just give me more Gina Davis. Like, I like in the beginning too, the guy goes to shoot her, and she's like, "I took the bullets out of that." So she just used the guy.
I took your balls.
Yeah. I just like that she saw it coming.
It's a line cool. That apparently was cut for the UK cinema release for this one.
Oh, and the dance number that you didn't get.
And the dance number, of course, yes. There were further cuts for the cinema release.
Censoring your balls. Yeah.
Wait, that's a... Wait. BS? PTS? BTS? PTS.
PTS.
PBS. And listen... How great are the face punches in this movie? I love sound effects.
Yeah. You mentioned that. The sound effects are crazy. All they're missing is the, like, Batman 66 pow.
Yes, exactly. And you know what I like about Rennie Harlan? He was talking about the movie. He's like, I made sure to just add as much humor in this as possible. So, like, people watching it, I don't know. I just wonder how
humor
people...
without quips. Yeah.
How?
Oh, wow.
How is such a thing?
Like the line about the line about the iguana, and then her line about like I thought I'd be passed out. Like, it's just funny, cheeky dialogue. So I mean, I don't know how people watch this and not like. I feel like I was able to get on the wavelength of this movie quite quick, but other people weren't. It's kind of a bummer.
Well, what's ironic is that every time I mention this to someone, I find more people who like it than people who don't.
Oh, hey.
Again, maybe I'm just hanging out with the right people. But
pirates.
pirates. Archers. I think that it's one of those where, like you said, the narrative was set, and so it got critically panned. But maybe it didn't get the cult following that I think Long Kiss Goodnight has, right? I think Long Kiss Goodnight is kind of widely accepted as a big cult hit. I don't know that this got that, and maybe it should.
Mm-hmm.
I think Pirates of the Caribbean came in and so maybe overshadowed it. Was this maybe ahead of its time? Was it? I don't know.
It was just too good. And it got buried.
Yeah.
And it went over budget. And that was in the press a lot. And everyone wrote about that. And I just think people... I'm telling you, go read some of the comments about this, like the negative comments. You'll just... Oh, Rennie Harlan wanted to direct his... Like, you know, like, no, Rennie Harlan... Yeah, don't. It'll make you very angry. There's articles by major publications where they're like, Harlan refused to give his wife a smaller role, or his, you know, fiance wife a smaller role. Like, he insisted that she had a bigger role. Maybe he should have brought in an A-lister and given Douglas more to do. And I'm like, why?
She A-lister at this point? When did she win her Oscar?
Yeah, 80s?
Yeah, it's the 80s. Tourist. Yeah.
And then, I mean, A League of Their Own had already come out.
Yeah,
I mean,
so she's clearly an A-lister.
And it's just so odd. You have this, like, Mensa A-list Oscar-winning archer in this movie, and they're like, well, you know, he just did it because he... Oh, Thelma and Louise, too. That was a gigantic
film.
Yeah,
she was nominated for Thelma and Louise. So she's like the two-time Oscar nominee, one-time winner at that point.
Yeah, so you have A-lister. And I'm just... it just gets so annoying
again,
to read all this.
So, again, what's in is just good old-fashioned sexism.
Yeah. And I'm I really do pick up on patterns. Like, I really, as a researcher, I love looking at patterns. And I get quite annoyed because, like, I just think the narrative was set about this. And there's a lot of critics who, you know, someone's like, yeah, she's not athletic enough for it.
So she's a world-class archer.
Yeah, I know. I told Megan that, my wife, and she's like, what? But, I just think it got a bad release date. It was up against some major competition. You know, John Carter, and I mean, there are movies like John Carter, The Lone Ranger, I think, that are buried before they come out.
Well, I will join
justifiably.
The Ranger, I thought that was unwatchable.
Yeah, I mean, like, but they had to build real trains for that, and like, but then there was like a lot of floods, and they just endured so much. So I think sometimes this narrative's out, and
there's a horse in a tree. There were carnivorous rabbits.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay, other action films in 95. I would say she is just as athletic as Pierce Brosnan for GoldenEye. Steven Seagal for Under Siege 2.
Yeah.
I'll give it to Stallone.
Stallone might win that contest.
Yeah. Costner in Waterworld.
Oh, sure.
He's way more athletic than Costner.
Wow, Waterworld was also 95?
Yes.
And am I right in thinking that that movie also huge, like...
Oh,
very much. Huge, yes. A bomb would be, yeah.
But also, that set the narrative too, because that came out before Cutthroat Island.
That's
so you already had one gigantic, big budget. I mean, Waterworld made money, but I think the narrative was there.
Still one of the best things at Universal Studios Hollywood. It's still going because people love that stunt show. It is wonderful.
Jet Ski City. But yeah, what do you think? Do you think that also hurt? Like looking through this, that narrative, like of that?
I am in favor of shifting the discussion around this movie to blaming Waterworld for its failure.
There it is. Blame Done. Waterworld.
Okay.
Oh, and then Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd, yeah, man.
Sudden Death. Jean-Claude Van Damme fights a
Isn't
penguin.
Isn't that the hockey one?
Yeah, he fights a penguin.
Oh, God.
Congo.
Mascot.
Desperado. Oh, boy. Yeah. Congo was one where I read the book and then saw the movie and was like, but did these people read the book?
Gina Davis, far more athletic than Laura Linney and Dylan Walsh. and Grant Heslov. And Joe Don Baker.
Oh,
Tim
man.
Curry. If you want a non-athletic cast.
Tim Curry in that movie with the accent that is questionable at best, but he commits to it.
Put down the sesame cake.
Herkimer Homolka. That's a fun name to say. You got a fun name, Herkimer Homolka.
And that would be the point where I was like, no, I read the book, but these people did not. So it's all right. It's okay.
Oh, I love Congo.
I had a gorilla.
Yeah, Laura Linney shoots missiles out of the sky with a flare gun alongside Ernie Hudson. It's right. Beautiful.
Bruce Campbell gets brutally murdered in the first minute and a half.
Based on the first story. Yeah.
This brought him in for his yelling.
Oh, man.
Well, this was awesome. Thank you for joining. This was awesome. I'm so glad that we finally got to talk about this movie and see how great it is. Jay, did you do the Deep in Blue stats on it?
I did. Well, before we get into that, I've been trying to find connections between the film we watch and the Deep Blue Sea franchise. So I just have a few. There's a character called Shaw, just like in Deep Blue Sea 3.
Of course.
Very easy, acceptable. The scene where Gina Davis is waiting down on the anchor for it to be pulled up to come on the boat. We have no idea how long she's down there. Reminding me of the shark in Susan's room in Deep Blue Sea. Just how long is that shark in there? How long is she down on the anchor? I don't know. The film, the climax has a giant explosion near a sinking workplace.
Okay.
the actor who plays one of the traitorous guys is Jimmy Skaggs. It's a lot like Tom Skoggs.
Mm-hmm.
Skaggs, I don't know. And then the scene where during the storm, when Morgan and Blair are in her office, and the window breaks behind them, and water rushes through, it's very much like Jim's death.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of even shot from the same angle with the water rushing through the window behind them. So that's my connection. Also, no connection, but I look forward to one day somebody giving me the insult of, "You're harder to kill than your father." I just feel like someone's going to say that to me at some point. I look forward.
that is a true piratey kind of yes or no or insult.
Indeed.
Harder to kill than your father. What? You killed my father.
In terms of deepest and bluest, we're obviously not going to be anywhere near last week's The Abyss in either of these. That was a very, very deep, not as blue as we thought, but still quite a blue film. This film, it starts out early on when her father is dropped on the anchor and he goes down and she has to swim down to save him. I thought, oh, here we go. We're underwater within the first 6 minutes. And then that's it for the film. That's the only sub-sea level like 32 seconds of the film. So the average depth ends up being about 3.5 meters up in the air. So 11.5 feet. Disappointing, if I'm honest. And only 26% blue as well. So not even that blue. And a lot of nighttime...
There's a lot of green, isn't it?
Yes, there's a lot of green. And a lot of the shots in the water are at night or day for night, as Mark said. So it's just coming up as black, the water, in those scenes. Or grey in some of it. So, yeah, disappointingly not very blue. Yeah, but they took my note from a previous week where the start of the closing credits have a blue background to them. That's free blueness. It doesn't take anything away from the film. It's just free blue. But then it goes into black for the majority. So they threw away their chances to be bluer than they were.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know what people are thinking about. But yeah, not very blue. So this is the least shallow film we've covered so far. Second
least
to The Shallows.
Film.
Yeah. So the least deep. Most shallow. Okay, it's hard to say it's the most shallow when it's up in the air. It's the least deep.
There's a lot of cliff work in this. It adds height.
Yeah, and I figured it wasn't going to be very deep, so I didn't spend a lot of time working out how high the cliffs were going to be, because I don't care about up, I want down. Mm. If you're up, in whatever. Yeah. But thank you, Jeanette, for being here. what would you like to plug? Where can the listeners find you?
Well, you can find my movie reviews at my website, The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl, which you can find at jwardadventures.blogspot.com. If you follow me on the Facebooks and the Twitters, as pointed out, I do share occasional dance videos of myself and my dance troupe, and you can also find details about us at tamarindtribalbellydance.com.
Fantastic. And listeners, you can find my writing over at lifeversusfilm.com, Life vs Film, or I have a monthly movie trivia podcast over on the Lambcast called Lampity, which Jeanette and Mark have both been on before. Mm-hmm. And it's always a fun time.
Always a fun time.
Have you ever won?
No, I don't win. Actually, I won one game one time, but...
not a Lampity, a different game.
No, not on Lampity.
But it's always fun to have you on. Entertaining guest.
I'm always happy to be there and lose with a lot of optimism.
And you do it very well. Mark, where can people find you?
Yeah, Movies, Films, and Flicks, Movies, Films, and FLIX. You can check out all the reviews and the podcast. And then, yeah, just all the other stuff. Film Theory, just type in Mark Hoffmeyer Film Theory. I do work for Fandom now, so you buy the numbers videos. You can go watch. Those are on YouTube. I got those. And then, listen to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong and Rotten Tomatoes Versus. So Deep Blue Sea was mentioned on Versus, and Deep Blue Sea won that episode, and it's doing really well. So go check that one out. Deep Blue Sea versus The Shallows versus The Meg.
The Meg.
Hmm. It's a good episode.
The Meg.
Yuck.
A film we will not be covering in this section. I have seen it. Next week, we're looking at Mindhunters, a film I know nothing about. So that should be fun. As for this week, that's for our coverage on Cutthroat Island. Thank you again to Jeanette Ward for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. What a supreme pleasure to be able to talk about this movie and how great it is.
I am Jake Lewis.
And I'm Mark Hoffmeyer. And you're right, I love talking about this movie. I adore it. It's all good. Yeah. I'm gonna go drink some rum.
And we'll deep blue see you next week.